From the land of Grand University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the very first day of fall, the 22nd day of September 2016. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. And a bit later in the program, Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds from Windsor, Illinois, will be here to check out the cash grain market and the situation on his farm there in Shelby County, Illinois. Along the way, we'll check in on the agricultural weather forecast with Mike Tenor from T-Storm out of Chicago, Illinois, and hear how Daryl Good sees changes, well, really no change in yield or acreage in the USDA's upcoming reports, and why that's based in history. And it all comes up right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago for this Thursday afternoon, corn futures finished 3.25 lower, $3.36 3/4 in the December contract. The March hit 3.25 lower as well, $3.46 3/4 the trade there. The May at 3.54 down 3, July down 3 at 3.60 3/4. December corn of next year, 3 cents lower at $3.76 1/2. November beans up a penny at $9.76 1/2. January 982 up 1, the March at 986, 1.25 higher. May futures $9.91 1/4 up 1, July a half higher at 9.95 1/2, and next year's November beans at $9.64 1/2 unchanged for the day. Bean oil futures 56 cents higher at 33.96. Bean meal at 307.90 down 80 cents. December soft red winter wheat 2.25 lower at 405.5. July at 450 even, a penny and a quarter lower for the harvest month for the soft red. The harvest in the hard red at 457, that's the July contract, a penny and a half lower. Live cattle futures October contract at $1.80 at $106.75 per 100 pounds. September feeders at $136.85, up 50 cents. October, really the lead now, down a dime at $132.12 1/2, and lean hogs. October contract at $54 even, 42.5 cents lower. December there at $48.32 1/2. Up 7.5 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Do find us online at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. It is the 22nd day of September, the very first day of fall. We're joined now by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
How you doing, Todd?
Oh, I'm doing very well. Farmers in this part of the world are moving. Farmers in Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin certainly probably are not moving, given the amount of rain they've had over the last 22 hours or so. However, corn futures haven't done a lot, and neither have soybeans. And I want you to go through the technical side of this marketplace. Can you start with the corn and tell me where we stand, maybe in your opinion, and daily, weekly, monthly charts, or all three?
Well, I think, you know, we've gone through 4 days of this week, and this is one of the weakest weeks of the year. You take the last 2 weeks of September, if you can't make a market go down during those 2 weeks, then you'd have to say that the underlying fundamental structure of the market has changed, or something is happening not to allow that. And even with today's decline in corn, we're basically unchanged for the week. And actually, soybeans, even though they only closed a penny or so higher, are actually higher for the week. So I do think at least up through Thursday here, the markets have held up quite well, given the harvest activity that we're hearing about and is spreading clear across the country. Now, corn. If you look at December corn futures, what I would assume most chartists are looking at is a potential little head and shoulders bottom formation on the daily chart. Now, we were able to go right up against the neckline, which kind of comes into play maybe a penny or so higher than today's high point. Today's high point was 41.5. So at the moment, that neckline of a head and shoulders bottom is offering a lot of technical resistance. Now, yesterday we did see a decline in open interest, so we did see some liquidation yesterday. I think that's being triggered by a short-term overbought technical condition. And then today's export sales report, while it does show overall weekly export sales or total sales for the marketing year well above last year, it doesn't really have the spark that the soybean sales report has. And we're not getting daily announcements of corn sales. And I think the reason is that farmers cleaned out their corn bins during the month of August. And then I think it kind of climaxed right at the end of August before they had to re-up for new storage charges starting September 1st. And if you look at the chart, that is the bottom of the corn market. And basically since then, we've been able to rally. And now we're sitting at least in the upper third of the price range since that end of August. So the end users, and what I mean, and more so probably more importantly, your multinational grain companies that not only use it domestically, but also export it around the world, they are pretty well have a good inventory of supply on hand. And they really don't have to be very aggressive buyers in the corn market. And then, of course, the other thing we're hearing, I know Central Illinois farmers and Central Illinois or Central Indiana farmers or a listening audience are not seeing the yields that they thought they should be seeing if Illinois was going to reach that 200 bushel average that USDA is projecting. But I think if you get outside of those areas and you get into some of the fringe areas, we're hearing a steady diet of best ever yield. So I think there's some question whether or not USDA will lower the yield, or if they do lower the yield, it may be only marginally. And then the grain stocks report coming at us next Friday. There's a big debate on whether or not ethanol usage could go up 100 to 200, stay the same. And I think then there's a big argument of whether or not feed usage could come down 100 or 50 based upon the June report and the price of wheat during the summer months. So I think there's some uncertainty there in the grain stocks report. And then even though the corn yields may not be quite up to USDA's level, we do have an adequate supply of corn given the carryout that we're carrying in to this current marketing year. So corn's kind of stalled, at least for the time being, where on the other hand, soybeans have really had a strong demand base. The multinational grain companies that are both end users domestically and exporters, and then you've got some grain companies that are just plain exporters, they're short bought on corn, on soybeans. They've got a lot of demand on the books. They don't necessarily have the cash inventory, and that is why soybeans are actually holding up much stronger than anybody would expect, especially given the way farmers are selling soybeans. My understanding, farmers are pulling the trigger on soybeans as fast as they can combine them. And the reason is the fantastic yields that are coming in, whether it's 65 or 70 bushels or 62 bushels, when you multiply that by the current day prices, they look at overall acre revenue, and many of them are making money at that level. They can make their operations scour, they can pay bills, and they can kind of keep the heat off of from the lender. So that is what we're seeing basically in the bean complex, whereas corn, I think farmers still have been fairly reluctant sellers, or at least the ones that are not seeing those huge yields. We must be seeing some selling in the areas that are having the best ever yields. So there is some movement going into the pipeline.
Which of the two commodities do you think has the best chance to maintain or improve prices over the next 2 months?
Oh, I think corn is going to gain on soybeans. Now, whether or not corn is going to go up or beans going to go down. It might be a combination of everything. I think this head and shoulders bottom formation in corn is eventually going to trigger a corn futures rally, let's say 370, give or take a nickel at some point in time here. Soybeans, a steady diet of selling, the farmers selling with a steady diet of these high-end yields. At some point in time, we're probably going to see some price erosion. But as the old saying goes, once the inventory moves out of farmer hands, that is when the real bull market actually begins. So it'll all depend upon probably South America and what kind of weather pattern they have down there to see what happens to our prices here after harvest.
You think acreage changes in South America will have much of an impact, especially what might happen in Argentina given their tax situation?
I think it's going to be supportive to soybeans, even with our record crop, because to my understanding, they're increasing corn acres and decreasing soybean acres, and that would at least maybe, if they would get into some weather problems, number one, weather problems are more detrimental to corn, and any kind of weather problems on soybeans that would shorten up the world supply would keep the United States very competitive in the world market. Also, the dollar did decide to decline today. These people that's been thinking that Yellen was going to raise the interest rates in a presidential election year when the Democrats are trying to elect the first woman president, they must all live in Colorado and smoke in the pipe, because that's not going to happen. And you could see that yesterday. It wasn't going to happen. And interest rates stayed unchanged, so people that were long the dollar, betting on higher interest rates, had to bail today.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, joins us on this Thursday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. In about 45 minutes, I'll speak with Greg Ginder of FC Stone, Jerry Gulke of the Gulke Group, Bryce Norm from Farm Futures, and Brian Stark of the Andersons during the recording of our Commodity Week program. That's at 3 o'clock today, Central Time, posted to our website at about 5 p.m. this evening. Commodity Week, our weekly look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture. You can pick it up online at WILLAG.org. Again, our panelists this week include Greg Ginder, Jerry Gulke, Bryce Knorr, and Brian Stark. In today's agricultural news, just in case you missed that Farm Futures campaign questionnaire sent to Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton and their answers, here's a quick recap. Clinton and Trump offered different visions of how they'd approach a 2018 farm bill. Clinton's response was heavy on specifics and called for a, quote, focused safety net for farmers and ranchers by continuing to make progress in targeting federal resources in commodity payment, crop insurance, and disaster assistance programs, which is all the more important with current commodity market prices, unquote. Trump's response was more abbreviated. He pledged to be an, quote, active participant in writing the next farm bill and delivering it on time, unquote, and added that he supports, quote, a strong safety net for our nation's farmers. Trump also said he'd rely on his running mate, Indiana Governor Mike Pence, for advice on agricultural issues, and once again vowed to lead a pro-agriculture administration. Let's stay in Washington, D.C., but check back in with the TPP, or the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Conservative groups have given a boost to the Free Trade Pact. Conservative lawmakers looking for a way to buck Donald Trump's populist message on trade may have gotten a little more cover, with more than 30 conservative and libertarian groups sending a letter today to Congress expressing strong support for free trade. To some, the false promises of protectionism may be politically alluring. However, as history has demonstrated, increased economic isolation and protectionism would be disastrous for American businesses and consumers, writes the National Taxpayers Union, Club for Growth, Freedom Works, and other groups. Although the TPP isn't specifically mentioned, the groups urge lawmakers to stand by our organizations in advocating for free trade. The letter acknowledges that while no trade pact is perfect, a deal should primarily serve to reduce tariffs and trade barriers. And that's a quick look at today's agricultural news. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Well, barring a weather catastrophe in the United States, there isn't much that's likely to change USDA's corn production calculation. Early corn yield reports have been good, but pretty variable. There are more than a few concerns about a disease called diplodia, too. Some are beginning to piece these items together to make a case for USDA to lower its corn yield estimate. This isn't very likely, thanks University of Illinois agricultural economist Darrell Good.
The fact is, if you look at history, the last 20 years, for example, there's a strong tendency for the corn yield estimate to get higher in January compared to what it was in September. That's happened 70% of the time in the last 20 years, almost 70% of the time in the last 40 years. So those looking for a lower yield estimate would be bucking history just a little bit. But you can't rule it out.
Maybe not, but even if the USDA yield changes, it won't be by much, thanks Darrell Good. Certainly not enough to really alter the supply-demand balance sheet, changing it from a surplus to a tight supply situation. He doesn't expect USDA to change the acreage numbers much either. This is because the difference between the Farm Service Agency reported acreage figures released in August and then again in September was very small.
Which tells me that reporting is occurring at a very timely fashion, probably has occurred early, and I would not look for much more of an increase in FSA acreage in subsequent reports. So now we look at where is FSA compared to the NAS estimate, and historically when dust settles on corn, NAS acreage is 3 to 3.5% higher than FSA, about 2% higher than FSA on soybeans. And if you look at where we are right now, we're right in that range.
Consequently, Darrell Good does not expect NAS to change its corn acreage estimate very much going forward. If this is the case, it leaves the U.S. with record corn yield and production figures. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. In just about a half an hour, I'll record Commodity Week posted to our website. You can pick it up on the website at WILLAG.org by about 5 o'clock this evening. Our panelists will include today Greg Gender of FC Stone. He's out of Chesterfield, Missouri. Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Jerry Gulkey of the Gulkey Group. Bryce Nortu of Farm Futures. Bryce out of Elkhorn, Wisconsin. Should be a fantastic program. You can listen to it in your combine if you'd like. Just hook the Bluetooth up there. It'll be up by about 5 o'clock tonight. Of course, airs tomorrow right here on these radio stations for the 2 o'clock hour and then over the weekend, too. That's Commodity Week, our weekly look at what's been happening in the world of the marketplace. Greg Gender, Jerry Gulkey, Bryce Knorr, and Brian Stark will be our panelists today. Now, on the phone line with us to take a look at what's been happening in the cash grain market, speaking of the combine, from the combine this afternoon is Matt Bennett. He's at Bennett Consulting in Channel Seeds. Good afternoon to you, Matt. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm very, very good. Can you tell me a little bit about Matt? Can you tell me, Matt Bennett, just a little bit about what it is that you've been thinking about the marketplace this afternoon?
Well, you know, looking at the corn market, I mean, we're scaling back just a little bit today. You know, obviously, a lot of folks are saying, hey, this is a really big drought, you know, even if it's not a 174. You know, if it's a 170, it's a record-sized crop. And so, yeah, I don't know. There's two sides to this. I think that there's several producers that are saying maybe my crop's not quite as big as I was expecting, but it's still pretty good. And then the other camp, of course, that this is going to be a big crop either way. And so I think the path of least resistance right now during harvest is most likely going to be at the downside.
What's your crop look like there?
We're picking some awfully good corn today. I can't complain. This field actually is less than 10 bushels off of the 14 yield. We've had a lot of corn that's been really good, but then, you know, we haven't quite had the 2014 type yield on our farm anyway. We just had too much stress early on, but cannot complain about my yields. I feel really good about them. Haven't had a whole lot of diplodia or anything that's been docked on a load yet, so we're feeling pretty good about the quality of the corn as well.
You've been shucking corn for about a week. How long will you be picking corn? You've got probably another open week in front of you, I think.
You know, we're probably going to switch over to beans tomorrow afternoon. You know, we've got several beans that are borderline. We went listed a couple of them right after lunch. I think that we're going to be able to cut beans tomorrow. And I imagine we'll cut beans for, you know, a good week to 10 days before we'll finish back up on corn after we get done with all the beans. But you know, there's a lot of beans getting cut in this part of the world yesterday and more so today.
Very quickly, are you making this switch out of necessity or because you want to market those beans over the scale now?
Well, most of my beans are sold ahead of time. It's just time to cut them.
Okay. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us for the afternoon.
Yep. Thank you, John.
That is Matt Bennett. He's at Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Thanks for making your contribution in support of agriculture. You can always just make that online at willpledge.org. Now we're joined by Mike Tenora. He's a T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Thanks for being with us, Mike. I think we probably ought to start with the rains that have been inundating parts of Iowa, Wisconsin, a little bit of Minnesota, and maybe even northern Illinois. Tell me about those in the last 24 hours.
Well, you're absolutely right in that those areas did see very heavy rainfall over the last 24 hours. Radar estimates suggest that 1.5 to 3 inches was widespread within southeast Minnesota, northeast Iowa, and southern Wisconsin. The interesting thing about all of that rain is that it fell on the exact location where it had been excessively wet just prior to this period. Prior to yesterday morning, our proprietary analysis calculated that 7% of U.S. corn and soybean production had received at least 8 inches of rain over the last 30 days. About half of that came from this area that was unusually wet already. Now that same area received heavy rainfall over the last 24 hours, it's still raining in some of those areas even early this afternoon, and there will be some more rain through tonight and then a much more significant rainfall from Sunday into Monday across the same area. By the time you put all of this together, we can see that at the U.S. level, around 11% to around 13% of U.S. Corn and soybean production will have received at least 8 inches over the last 30-day period. That's basically accounting for what's already happened and then what's going to happen over the next few days. That's a lot of rain, Todd, and we think that there's some significant flooding taking place within parts of these regions. And whether or not this turns into a bigger issue for overall U.S. corn and soybean production remains to be seen, and we don't know the answer to that question. But we can at least quantify it. And again, around 11% to 13% of U.S. corn and soybean production appears to be considerably too wet, and much of that coming from, again, parts of Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin.
At the same time, we've been pretty warm. It's really warm, in fact, again today. How warm have we been for the month of September?
Well, that's been one of the most unusual features of the entire 2016 growing season. It's hard to believe, but at the current pace we're on, it looks like there's a pretty good chance for September to rank within the five warmest of the last 121 years across the U.S. Corn Belt. But here's where it gets a little bit more interesting. There's a pretty good chance that we might end up being the warmest of the entire period for September of 2016, meaning that we'll have to go back to a year before 1895, when our records began, to find a year that was similarly warm. If you isolate out the five warmest, except for this one, one of the fascinating things is that all of those 5 years had an El Nino just prior to it, or there was an El Nino developing during it. So this September warmth, although unusual, is part of the El Nino story because, again, we did have a strong El Nino earlier in this year, and a lot of these really mild Septembers also had some of the warmest Septembers on record. So even though it's anomalous, maybe not all that unusual or unexpected, given what we see here with our data points.
So we've been wet in the Western Corn Belt, warm across the whole of the Midwest and the Delta region. What about the Eastern and Southern belts? How about rainfall in those areas? Are they a different story?
They certainly are a different story, and the reason is because it just hasn't rained all that much. Now, we did see some significant rainfall last week on Friday and Saturday that moved through parts of Missouri, then southern Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, even the Champaign area, received some pretty good rains last weekend. But other than that, it hasn't rained too much since then. And most of this area is going to stay warmer and drier than normal all the way through Sunday and into Monday. Once we get into Monday, there will be some showers and thunderstorms moving through, but we don't think there will be all that much in the way of rain. Let's say 1/4 of an inch of rain to 3/4 of an inch, which isn't too big of a deal and shouldn't knock too many people out of their fields for a long period of time. But nonetheless, a little bit of rain coming up for these areas, but not until Monday. And once we get beyond Monday, everybody in the central U.S. dries out for at least 3 to 5 days. So it will be a bit of a better situation for everybody across the Midwest by the time we get into next week.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us today, Mike. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome, Todd. Have a great afternoon.
That's Mike Tenor of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.